No. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jai. So we're going to read from the Krishna book this morning about Srimati Rukmini. And we're going to be reading the chapter 51, Krishna the Ranchor. But we're not going to read that first part. We'll just read where it begins about Rukmini Devi. Rukmini Devi is the supreme mother of New Dwarka. Whatever happens in New Dwarka is by her grace, by her mercy. As we read this particular pastime of Rukmini, we'll see that Krishna, he went to great lengths to acquire Rukmini as his wife. So if the Supreme Personality of Godhead will go out of his way in order to be with Rukmini, she has to be very special. It's not like an ordinary relationship. No one can be the consort of the Supreme Lord unless they're the most highest servant of the Lord. And Rukmini was one of 16,108 wives of Lord Krishna, Dwarkadish. And she was the principal queen in Dwarka. And Srila Prabhupada, he named this temple New Dwarkadham. And he actually named Rukmini and Dwarkadish also. And this was one of Srila Prabhupada's favorite places to be, not because of just the building. It's not the building that he was so attracted to. He was very much pleased and attracted to the transcendental form of Rukmini and Dwarkadish. So we're very fortunate that we're able to be here and worship these beautiful deities, Rukmini Dwarkadish. Rukmini is like the goddess of fortune. We can see whatever opulence has come here in New Dwarka is by her grace, by her mercy. We see that if devotees take it upon themselves to worship her and somehow or other satisfy her, then all opulences will come to us also. It's not that we should make an agreement. It's not that we should walk up to Rukmini and say, let me make this deal with you, that, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that, and then I'll have this. This is not what we're referring to. This is a transcendental arrangement where we simply want to serve the most intimate consort of Dwarkadish. And this particular day, it's very auspicious to see how close we can come to Rukmini Devi in our service attitude, a pure devotional service, anyabhilasita sunyam, unmotivated and uninterrupted. This is the real essence of Krishna consciousness. And until we come to that platform, we won't understand Rukmini and Dwarkadish. We'll just think that there are some beautiful forms on the altar, and that's it. And we'll think that they're only in the altar, or on the altar, or in the temple, and that they're nowhere else. Every nook, cranny, and corner of this community, it belongs to Srimati Rukmini and Sri Dwarkadish. So you cannot hide from them. They own everything here. We own nothing. Just like when we come to Krishna consciousness, what do we own? Most of us that came to this Krishna conscious movement, we came here with nothing. Jai, Shishi Rukmini Dwarkanatha Ki Jai. When we came to Krishna consciousness, we literally had nothing. Literally. Zero. Zero balance. But as the years go by, all of a sudden, we accumulate so much. And we acquire so much. When we came, we didn't have this many friends. Now all of a sudden we have so many friends. When we came, We had no opulence in terms of our consciousness, our appearance, our desires. There's nothing opulent about those things. Our desires were very low class. Our opulences were practically nil. But by course of time, by worshipping Sri Sri Rukmini Draupadish, so many wonderful things have happened to our life. And those of us that have been here for many years, we can see how this actually happens. We sometimes need to just sit down and just check and see what opulences we've acquired since we've been here. Because it's very mystical. It's not something that you can just register. It's like the body. The body's changing daily. We're getting older daily, but we don't know how this is happening. We don't feel it. We just know we're getting older by the years. Every time your birthday comes, it's like, oh my God, I'm that old? I don't feel that old. It's almost inconceivable, very subtle, this time factor. And also, the execution of devotional service in Krishna consciousness for Rukmini Draupadish is the same. It's very mystical, very subtle. We cannot even understand it. But in the course of time, we see the effects that we develop more and more taste for chanting. What greater opulence is there than one devotee who develops the sincere desire to really chant nicely the names of Lord Krishna? What opulence is that? That opulence is nothing greater that surpasses that opulence in this world. Nothing. Because if one takes shelter of the holy name and tastes the chanting of the holy name, that devotee will go back home, back to Godhead. What other higher benefit can one achieve in this life than that benefit? It's inconceivable. And we don't even realize it. We don't even sit down sometimes and just develop some gratitude, some genuine gratitude to Srila Prabhupada and to Sri Sri Rukmini Draupadish that have made our life so beautiful, you know, so wonderful that each day you get up and you see the deities and what beauty. Look at all the flowers on the altar. And look at the altar in terms of the construction of the Shinghasan. And what beauty is that? We're looking at beauty every day. If you were just to live in an apartment, you know, down the street somewhere, what beauty would you have in your home? Would you even have a vase of flowers? Who would do that? Who would go out every day and spend thousands of dollars to decorate your apartment with flowers? No one would do that. So, practically speaking, no one sees any beauty in the world. Hardly anyone. Unless you're extremely wealthy. And if you have that kind of consciousness. But in Krishna consciousness, beauty is around us all the time in the form of the Lord. Isn't it beautiful to wake up at 4:30, you're cranky and grumpy, and you know you don't even know what's going on. But the minute you come in the temple room, what happens? When the doors open and we start to chant Hare Krishna, what happens? Your heart opens up and it becomes softened, and your cranky nature and your mind all of a sudden become overwhelmed, overtaken by the holy name and the form of the Lord and the association of devotees. Whereas if you were living in some apartment down the street or whatever, who would be there to wake you up at 4 o'clock in the morning or 4:30 and make you happy like this? No, you'd be grumpy, cranky until you had a cup of brew, and then you'd be artificially inspired to get out there and do some hard work to serve someone, and doing it begrudgingly, stressed out and anxiety. So these are all subtleties that we don't take gratitude for. That what we've seen so many devotees come in Krishna consciousness that are just naturally disgruntled and upset. And in course of time, the years go by, and all of a sudden they're no longer disgruntled or upset. They're actually happy and satisfied. This is an amazing situation because we don't really know what happiness is until you come to Krishna consciousness. And then eventually one day when you're freed from these modes of nature, the bliss, anandamudivardhanam, it's continuous. It never ceases. It just escalates more and more in the ocean of transcendental bliss. And this is what Rukmini and Dwarkadish are offering us, this opportunity. And today is a great day to really recognize Rukmini, our mother, our eternal mother, who cares about us, who loves us, who tolerates us and all our inconsistencies and flaws that we may have. She overlooks it constantly and still gives us mercy. So what better way can one exist in life that has a loving mother? Those of you that have had a loving mother in the material world, what is better than that? There's nothing better than a loving mother. One who cares and loves you for not, you know, your faults, but loves you because you are who you are. And Rukmini, she loves us like a true mother because we're spirit soul, servants of the Lord. And the more that we surrender to serve Dwarkadish, the more that Rukmini becomes ecstatic. And this is the loving exchanges of Krishna consciousness. And these are the things that we need to sit down and just analyze and really try to understand it. Really, this is very important. When we read the Krishna book Pastimes of Rukmini, we'll see what her qualifications were. Immensely potent to entice the glance of the Supreme Lord. Krishna went out of his way to even try to capture her from Shishupal. And it's pretty ecstatic. So we'll read here. It's not very long. Might be a little bit longer than 8:30. Might be like 8:45 or so, but please bear with us as we read. So, the story of Krishna's marriage with Rukmini is described as follows. The king of Vidarbha, Maharaj Bhishmaka, was a very qualified and devoted prince. He had 5 sons and only 1 daughter. The first son was known as Rukmi, the second Rukmarata, the third Rukmabahu, the fourth and youngest Rukmakesh, and the fifth Rukmamali. The brothers had 1 young sister, Rukmini. She was beautiful and chaste and was meant to be married to Lord Krishna. Many saintly persons and sages like Narada Muni and others used to visit the palace of King Bhishmaka. Naturally, Rukmini had a chance to talk with them, and in this way she obtained information about Krishna. She was informed about the 6 opulences of Krishna, and simply by hearing about him, she desired to surrender herself to his lotus feet and become his wife. Krishna had also heard of Rukmini. She was a reservoir of all transcendental qualities, intelligence, liberal-mindedness, exquisite beauty, and righteousness behavior. Krishna, therefore, decided that she was fit to be his wife. All of the family members and relatives of King Bhishmaka decided that Rukmini should be given in marriage to Krishna. However, her elder brother, Rukmi, despite the desire of the others, arranged for her marriage with Shishupal, a determined enemy of Krishna. When the black-eyed, beautiful Rukmini heard this settlement, she immediately became very morose. However, being a king's daughter, she understood political diplomacy and decided that there was no use in simply becoming morose. Some steps should be taken immediately. After some deliberation, she decided to send a message to Krishna, and so that she might not be deceived, she selected a qualified brahmana as her messenger. Such a qualified brahmana is always truthful and is a devotee of Vishnu. Without delay, the brahmana was sent to Dwarka. Reaching the gate of Dwarka, the brahmana informed the doorkeeper of his arrival, and the doorkeeper led him to the place where Krishna was sitting on a golden throne. Since the brahmana had the opportunity of being Rukmini's messenger, he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is the original cause of all causes. A Brahmana is a spiritual teacher of all the social divisions. Lord Shri Krishna, in order to teach everyone the Vedic etiquette of how to respect a Brahmana, immediately got up and offered him his throne. When the Brahmana was seated on the golden throne, Lord Shri Krishna began to worship him exactly in a manner in which the demigods worship Krishna. In this way, he taught everyone that worshiping his devotee is more valuable than worshiping himself. In due time, the Brahmana took his bath, accepted his meals, and took to rest on a bedstead completely bedecked with soft silk. As he was resting, Lord Sri Krishna silently approached and, with great respect, put the Brahmana's legs on his lap and began to massage them. In this way, Krishna appeared before the Brahmana and said, "My dear Brahmana, I hope that you are executing the religious principles without any difficulty and that your mind is always in a peaceful condition." End of quote. Different classes of people in the social world are engaged in various professions, and when one inquires as to the well-being of a particular person, it must be done on the basis of that person's occupation. Therefore, when one inquires as to the welfare of a Brahmana, the questions should be worded according to his condition of life so as not to disturb him. A peaceful mind is the basis for becoming truthful, clean, equipoised, self-controlled, and tolerant. Thus, by attaining knowledge and knowing its practical application in life, one becomes convinced about the absolute truth. The Brahmana knew Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and still he accepted the respectful service of the Lord on the grounds of Vedic social convention. When Lord Sri Krishna was playing just like a human being belonging to the Kshatriya division of the social system, and being a young boy, it was his duty to show respect to such a Brahmana. You see, if Krishna can do it, why can't we do it? If Krishna himself will worship a Brahmana in that capacity, what are we doing? Very beautiful. Lord Krishna continued, quote, "O best of all the Brahmanas, you should always remain satisfied, because if a Brahmana is always self-satisfied, he will not deviate from his prescribed duties. And simply by sticking to one's prescribed duties, everyone, especially the Brahmanas, can attain the highest perfection of all desires. Even if a person is as opulent as the king of heaven, Indra, if he is not satisfied, he inevitably has to transmigrate from one planet to another. Such a person can never be happy under any circumstances. But if a person's mind is satisfied, even if he is bereft of his high position, he can be happy living anywhere and everywhere." End of quote. This instruction of Krishna to the Brahmana is very significant. The purport is that a true Brahmana should not be disturbed in any situation. In this modern age of Kali Yuga, the so-called Brahmanas have accepted the abominable position of the Sudras or less than Sudras and still want to pass as qualified Brahmanas. Actually, a qualified Brahmana always sticks to his own duties and never accepts those of a Sudra or of one less than a Sudra. It is advised in the authorized scriptures that a Brahmana may, under awkward circumstances, accept a profession of a Kshatriya or even a Vaishya, but never is he to accept a profession of a Sudra. Lord Krishna declared that a Brahmana should never be disturbed by any adverse conditions of life if he is scrupulously sticks to his religious principles. In conclusion, Lord Krishna said, "I offer my respectful obeisances to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, because the Brahmanas are always self-satisfied and the Vaishnavas are always engaged in actual welfare activities for the human society. They are the best friends of the people in general. Both are free from false egoism and are always in a peaceful condition of mind." Lord Krishna then desired to know about the rulers in the Brahmanas' kingdom. So he inquired whether the citizens of the kingdom were all happy. A king's qualification is judged by the temperament of the people in the kingdom. If they are very happy in all respects, it is to be understood that the king is honest and executing his duties rightly. Krishna said that the king in whose kingdom the citizens are happy is very dear to him. Of course, Krishna could understand that the Brahmana had come with a confidential message. Therefore, he said, if you have no objection, I am giving you permission to speak about your mission. Thus, being very satisfied by these transcendental pastimes with the Lord, the Brahmana narrated the whole story of his mission to come and see Krishna. He got out the letter which Rukmini had written to Krishna and said, quote, these are the words of Princess Rukmini. My dear Krishna, O infallible and most beautiful one, any human being who happens to hear about your transcendental form and pastimes immediately absorbs through his ears your name, fame, and qualities. Thus, all his material pangs subside, and he fixes your form in his heart. Through such transcendental love for you, he sees you always within himself, and by this process, all his desires become fulfilled. Similarly, I have heard of your transcendental qualities. I may be shameless in expressing myself so directly, but you have captivated me and taken my heart. You may suspect that I am an unmarried girl, young in age, and may doubt my steadiness of character. But, my dear Mukunda, you are the supreme lion among the human beings, the supreme person among persons. Any girl, although not yet out of her home, or any woman who may be of the highest chastity, would desire to marry you. Being captivated by your unprecedented character, knowledge, opulence, and position, I know that you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, and that you are very kind toward your devotees. Therefore, I have decided to become your eternal maidservant. My dear Lord, I dedicate my life and soul unto your lotus feet. I have accepted your lordship as my selected husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme powerful, O lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it will be a ludicrous affair. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I am taken away by Shishupal and other princes like him. My dear Lord, in my previous life, I may have done public welfare work, like digging wells and growing trees, or pious activities such as performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices in serving the superior spiritual master, the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. By these activities, perhaps I have pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. If this is so, then I wish that you, Lord Krishna, the brother of Lord Balaram, would please come here and catch hold of my hand so that I may not be touched by Shishupal and his company. Rukmini Devi ki jai! Wow, what a request. Rukmini's marriage with Shishupal was already settled. Therefore, she suggested that Krishna kidnap her so that this might be changed. This sort of marriage in which the girl is kidnapped by force is known as Rakshasa and is practiced among the Kshatriyas, or the administrative, martial, spiritual type of men, spirited type of men. Because her marriage was already arranged to take place the next day.
Can I get some water?
Thank you. Because her marriage was already arranged to take place the next day, Rukmini suggested that Krishna come there incognito to kidnap her and then fight with Shishupal and his allies like the king of Magadha. Knowing that no one could conquer Krishna and that he would certainly emerge victorious, she addressed him as Ajita, the unconquerable. Rukmini told Krishna not to be concerned that many of her family members, including other women, might be wounded or even killed if the fighting took place within the palace. This is the spirit of Rukmini. She's such a kshatriya. What a spirit. And see that she invited Krishna, come, please take me. And even if there's a battle and people are killed or hurt, that's okay. And very, very spirited. As the king of a country thinks of diplomatic ways to achieve his object, similarly, Rukmini, being the daughter of a king, was diplomatic in suggesting how this unnecessary and undesirable killing could be avoided. She explained that it was the custom of her family to visit the temple of the goddess Durga, their family deity, before a marriage. In parentheses, it says the Kshatriya kings were mostly staunch Vaishnavas, worshipping Lord Vishnu in either the Radha Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan form. Still, for their material welfare, they used to worship the goddess Durga. They never made the mistake, however, of accepting the demigods as the Supreme Lord on the level of Vishnu Tattva, as did some of the less intelligent men. End of quote. In order to avoid the unnecessary killing of her relatives, Rukmini suggested that it would be easiest for him to kidnap her while she was either going from the palace to the temple or else while she was returning home. She also explained to Krishna why she was so anxious to be married to him, even though her marriage was to take place with Shishupal, who was also qualified, being the son of a great king. Rukmini said that she did not think anyone was greater than Krishna, not even Lord Shiva, who is known as Mahadev, the greatest of all demigods. Lord Shiva also seeks the pleasure of Lord Krishna in order to be delivered from his entanglement in the quality of ignorance within the material world, in spite of the fact that Lord Shiva is the greatest of all great souls, Mahatmas. He keeps on his head the purifying water of the Ganges, which emanates from the hole in this material universe made by the toe of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is the charge of the material quality. Lord Shiva is in charge of the material quality of ignorance, and in order to keep himself in a transcendental position, he always meditates on Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Rukmini knew very well that obtaining the favor of Krishna was not an easy job. If even Lord Shiva must purify himself for this purpose, surely it would be difficult for Rukmini, who was only the daughter of a Kshatriya king. Thus, she desired to dedicate her life to observing severe austerities and penances, such as fasting and going without bodily comforts. If it were not possible in this lifetime to gain Krishna's favor by these activities, she was prepared to do the same lifetime after lifetime. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that pure devotees of the Lord execute devotional service with great determination. Such determination, as exhibited by Rukmini Devi, is the only price for purchasing Krishna's favor and is the only way to ultimate success in Krishna consciousness. After explaining Rukmini Devi's statement to Krishna, the Brahmana said, "My dear Krishna, chief of the Yadu dynasty, I have brought this confidential message for you from Rukmini. Now it is placed before you for your consideration. After due deliberation, you can act as you please, but if you want to do something, you must do it immediately. There is not much time left for action." Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 51st chapter of Krishna, Krishna the Ranchor. All right. We just have about 7 or 8 more pages to go. And this is Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. After hearing Rukmini's statement, Lord Krishna was very pleased. He immediately shook hands with the Brahmana and said, "My dear Brahmana, I am very glad to hear that Rukmini is anxious to marry me, since I am also anxious to get her hand. My mind is always absorbed in the thought of the daughter of Bhishmaka, and sometimes I cannot sleep at night because I am thinking of her. I can understand that the marriage of Rukmini with Shishupal has been arranged by her elder brother in a spirit of animosity toward me. So I am determined to give a good lesson to all these princes. Just as fire is extracted and utilized after manipulating ordinary wood, similarly, after dealing with these demoniac princes, I shall bring forth Rukmini like fire from their midst." Krishna, upon being informed of the specific date of Rukmini's marriage, became anxious to leave immediately. He asked his driver, Daruka, to harness the horses for his chariot and prepare to go to the kingdom of Vidarbha. The driver, just after hearing this order, brought Krishna's 4 special horses. The names and descriptions of these horses are mentioned in the Padma Purana. The first one, Saivya, was greenish. The second, Sugriva, was grayish like ice. The third, Megapushpa, was the color of a new cloud. And the last, Balahaka, was of ashen color. When the horses were yoked and the chariots ready to go, Krishna helped the Brahmana up and gave him a seat by his side. Immediately they started from Dwarka and within one night arrived at the province of Vidarbha. The kingdom of Dwarka is situated in the western part of India and Vidarbha is situated in the northern part. They are separated by a distance of not less than 1,000 miles. But the horses were so fast that they reached their destination, a town called Kundina, within one night, or at most 12 hours. That's pretty fast. I mean, Krishna is going over 100 miles an hour in his chariot. That's pretty fast. King Bhishmaka was not very enthusiastic about handing his daughter over to Shishupal, but he was obliged to accept marriage and settlement due to his affectionate attachment for his eldest son, who had negotiated it. As a matter of duty, he was decorating the city for the marriage ceremony and was acting in great earnestness to make it very successful. Water was sprinkled all over the streets, and the city was cleansed very nicely. Since India is situated in the tropical zone, the atmosphere is always dry. Due to this, dust always accumulates on the streets and roads, so they must be sprinkled with water at least once a day, and in big cities like Calcutta, twice a day. The roads of Kundina, were arranged with colored flags and festoons, and gates were constructed at particular crossings. The whole city was decorated very nicely. The beauty of the city was enhanced by the inhabitants, both men and women, who were dressed in washed cloth, decorated with sandalwood pulp, pearl necklaces, and flower garlands. Incense was burning everywhere, and fragrances like aguru scented the air. Priests and brahmanas were sumptuously fed, and, according to ritualistic ceremony, were given sufficient wealth and cows in charity. In this way, they were engaged in chanting Vedic hymns. The king's daughter, Rukmini, was exquisitely beautiful. She was very clean and had beautiful teeth. The auspicious sacred girdle was tied on her waist. She was given various types of jewelry to put on and long silken cloth to cover the upper and lower parts of her body. Learned priests gave her protection by chanting mantras from the Samaveda, Rigveda, and Yajurveda. After this, they chanted mantras from the Atharvaveda and offered oblations in the fire to pacify the ominous conjunctions of different stars. King Bhishmaka was very experienced in dealing with the brahmanas and priests when such ceremonies were held. He specifically distinguished the brahmanas by giving them large quantities of gold and silver, grains mixed with molasses, and cows decorated with golden ornaments. Damaghosh, Shishupal's father, executed all kinds of ritualistic performances to invoke good fortune for his own family. Shishupal's father was known as Damaghosh due to his superior ability to cut down unregulated citizens. Dama means curbing down, and Ghosh means famous. So he was famous for controlling the citizens. Damaghosh thought that if Krishna came to disturb the marriage ceremony, he would certainly cut him down with his military power. Therefore, after performing the various auspicious ceremonies, Damaghosh gathered his military divisions known as Madhasravi. He took many elephants, garlanded them with golden necklaces, and many chariots and horses were similarly decorated. It appeared that Damaghosh, along with his son and other companions, was going to Kundina, not completely forgetting the marriage, but mainly intent on fighting. When King Bhishmaka learned that Damaghosh and his party were arriving, he left the city to receive them. Outside the city gate, there were many gardens where the guests were welcome to stay. In the Vedic system of marriage, the bride's father receives the large party of the bridegroom and accommodates them in a suitable place for 2 or 3 days until the marriage ceremony is performed. The party led by Damaghosh contained thousands of men, among whom the prominent kings and personalities were Jarasandha, Dantavakra, Vidurath, and Pundraka. It was an open secret that Rukmini was meant to be married to Krishna, but that her elder brother, Rukmi, had arranged her marriage to Shishupal. There was also some whispering going on about a rumor that Rukmini had sent a messenger to Krishna. Therefore, the soldiers suspected that Krishna might cause a disturbance by attempting to kidnap Rukmini. Even though they were not without fear, they were all prepared to give Krishna a nice fight in order to prevent the girl from being taken away. Sri Balaram received the news that Krishna had left for Kundina, accompanied only by a brahmana. He also heard that Shishupal was there with a large number of soldiers. Suspecting that they would attack Krishna, Balaram took strong military divisions of chariots, infantry, horses, and elephants, and arrived at the precinct of Kundina. Meanwhile, inside the palace, Rukmini was expecting Krishna to arrive, but when neither he nor the brahmana who took her message appeared, she became full of anxiety and began to think how unfortunate she was. There is only one night between today and my marriage day, and still neither the brahmana nor Shyamasundar has returned. I cannot ascertain any reason for this. Having little hope, she thought perhaps Krishna had found reason to become dissatisfied and had rejected her fair proposal. As a result, the brahmana might have become disappointed and not come back. Although she was thinking of various causes for the delay, she expected them both at every moment. Rukmini further began to think that demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the goddess Durga might have been displeased. It is generally said that the demigods become angry when they are not properly worshipped. For instance, when Indra found that the inhabitants of Vrindavan were not worshipping him, Krishna, having stopped the Indra Yajna, he became very angry and wanted to chastise them. Thus, Rukmini was thinking that since she did not worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma very much, they might have become angry and tried to frustrate her plan. Similarly, she thought that the goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, might have taken the side of her husband. Lord Shiva is known as Rudra, and his wife is known as Rudrani. Rudrani and Rudra refer to those who are very accustomed to putting others in a distressed condition so they might cry forever. Rukmini was thinking of the goddess Durga as Giriraj, the daughter of the Himalayan mountains. The Himalayan mountains are very cold and hard, and she thought of the goddess Durga as hard-hearted and cold. In her anxiety to see Krishna, Rukmini, who was after all still a child, thought this way about the different demigods. The gopis worship goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. Similarly, Rukmini was thinking of the various types of demigods, not for material benefit, but in respect to Krishna. Praying to the demigods to achieve the favor of Krishna is not irregular, and Rukmini was fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Even though she pacified herself by thinking that the time for Govinda to arrive had not yet expired, Rukmini felt that she was hoping against hope. She began to shed tears, and when they became more forceful, she closed her eyes in helplessness. While Rukmini was in such deep thought, auspicious symptoms appeared in different parts of her body. Trembling began to occur in her left eyelid and in her arms and thighs. When trembling occurs in these parts of the body, it is an auspicious sign indicating that something lucrative can be expected. Just then, Rukmini, full of anxiety, saw the brahmana messenger. Krishna, being the supersoul of all living beings, could understand Rukmini's anxiety. Therefore, he sent the brahmana inside the palace to let her know that he had arrived. When Rukmini saw the brahmana, she could understand the auspicious trembling of her body and immediately became elated. She smiled and inquired from him whether or not Krishna had already come. The brahmana replied that the son of the Yadu dynasty, Sri Krishna, had arrived. He further encouraged her by saying that Krishna had promised to carry her away without fail. Rukmini was so elated by the brahmana's message that she wanted to give him in charity everything she possessed. However, finding nothing suitable for presentation, she simply offered him her respectful obeisances. The significance of offering respectful obeisances to a superior is that the one offering obeisances is obliged to the respected person. In other words, Rukmini implied that she would remain ever grateful to the brahmana. Anyone who gets the favor of the goddess of fortune, as did this Brahmana, is without a doubt always happy in material opulence. When King Bhishmaka heard that Krishna and Balaram had come, he invited them to see the marriage ceremony of his daughter. Immediately he arranged to receive them, along with their soldiers, in a suitable garden house. As was the Vedic custom, the king offered Krishna and Balaram honey and fresh washed cloth. He was hospitable not only to Krishna, Balaram, and kings such as Jarasandha, but he also received many other kings and princes according to their respective personal strength, age, and material possessions. Out of curiosity and eagerness, the people of Kundina assembled before Krishna and Balaram and began to drink the nectar of their beauty. With tearful eyes, they offered them their silent respects. They were very pleased, considering Lord Krishna the suitable match for Rukmini. They were so eager to unite Krishna and Rukmini that they began to pray to the personality of Godhead. Quote, "My dear Lord, if we have performed any pious activities that you are satisfied with, kindly be merciful upon us and accept the hand of Rukmini." End of quote. It appears that Rukmini was a very popular princess, and all the citizens, out of intense love for her, prayed for her best fortune. In the meantime, Rukmini, being very nicely dressed and protected by bodyguards, came out of the palace to visit the temple of Ambika, the goddess Durga. Deity worship in the temple has been in existence since the beginning of Vedic culture. There is a class of men described in the Bhagavad Gita as the Veda Vada Rata. They only believe in the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, but not in the temple worship. Such foolish people may here take note that although the marriage of Krishna and Rukmini took place more than 5,000 years ago, there were arrangements for temple worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, "Yanti deva vrata devan." The worshippers of the demigods attained the abode of the demigods. There were many people who worshipped the demigods and many who directly worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The system of demigod worship was directed mainly to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Ganesh, the sun god, and the goddess Durga. Lord Shiva and the goddess Durga were worshipped even by the royal families. Other minor demigods were worshipped by silly, inferior people. As far as the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are concerned, they simply worship Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, the worship of demigods is condemned but not forbidden. There it is clearly stated that the less intelligent class of men worship the different kinds of demigods for material benefit. On the other hand, even though Rukmini was the goddess of fortune, she went to the temple of the goddess Durga because the family deity was worshipped there. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that as Rukmini was proceeding towards the temple of the goddess Durga, within her heart she was always thinking of the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, when Rukmini went to the temple, it was not with the intention of an ordinary person who goes to beg for material benefits. Her only target was Krishna. When people go to the temple of a demigod, the objective is actually... When people go to the temple of a demigod, the objective is actually Krishna, since it is he who empowers the demigods to provide material benefits. As Rukmini proceeded toward the temple, she was very silent and grave. Her mother and her girlfriend were by her side, and the wife of a Brahmana was in the center. Surrounding her were royal bodyguards. This custom of a would-be bride going to the temple of a demigod is still practiced in India. As the procession continued, various musical sounds were heard: drums, conch shells, and bugles of different sizes, such as panavas, turiyas, and bairis, combined to make a sound which was not only auspicious, but very sweet to hear. There were thousands of wives of respectable brahmanas present. These women were all dressed very nicely with suitable ornaments. They presented Rukmini with flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and a variety of colorful garments to assist her in worshipping Lord Shiva and the goddess Durga. Some of these ladies were very old and knew perfectly well how to chant prayers to goddess Durga and Lord Shiva. So, followed by Rukmini and others, they led these prayers before the deity. Rukmini offered her prayers to the deity by saying, "My dear goddess Durga, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you as well as to your children. The goddess Durga has four famous children, two daughters, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and two famous sons, Lord Ganesh and Lord Kartikeya. They are all considered to be demigods and goddesses. Since the goddess Durga is always worshipped along with her famous children, Rukmini specifically offered her respectful obeisances to the deity in that way. However, her prayers were different. Ordinary people pray to the goddess Durga for material wealth, fame, profit, strength, and so on. Rukmini, however, desired to have Krishna for her husband and therefore prayed to the deity to be pleased upon her and bless her. Since she desired only Krishna, her worship of the demigods is not condemned. While Rukmini was praying, a variety of items were presented before the deity, chief of which were water, different kinds of flames, incense, garments, garlands, and various foodstuffs prepared with ghee, such as puris and kachuris. There were also fruits, sugarcane, betel nuts, and spices offered. With great devotion, Rukmini offered them to the deity according to the regular principles directed by the old Brahmana ladies. After this ritualistic ceremony, the ladies offered the remnants of the foodstuffs to Rukmini as prasadam, which she accepted with great respect. Then Rukmini offered her obeisances to the ladies and to the goddess Durga. After the business of deity worship was finished, Rukmini caught hold of the hand of one of her girlfriends and left the temple accompanied by others. We're almost there. All the princes and visitors who came to Kundina for the marriage were assembled outside the temple to see Rukmini. The princes were especially very eager to see her because they all actually thought that they would have Rukmini as their wife. Struck with wonder upon seeing Rukmini, they thought that she was specially manufactured by the Creator to bewilder all the great chivalrous princes. Her body was well constructed, in the middle portion being thin. She had green eyes, pink lips, and a beautiful face which was enhanced by her scattered hair and by different kinds of earrings. Around her feet she wore jeweled lockets. The bodily luster and beauty of Rukmini appeared as if painted by an artist perfectly, presenting beauty following the description of great poets. The breast of Rukmini is described as being a little bit high, indicating that she was just a youth not more than 13 or 14 years old. Her beauty was specifically intended to attract the attention of Krishna. Although the princess gazed upon her beautiful features, she was not at all proud. Her eyes moved restlessly, and when she smiled very simply, like an innocent girl, her teeth appeared just like lotus flowers. Expecting Krishna to take her away at any moment, she proceeded very slowly towards her home. Her legs moved just like a full-grown swan, and her ankle bells tinkled very mildly. As already explained, the great chivalrous princes who assembled there were so overwhelmed by Rukmini's beauty that they almost became unconscious. Full of lust, they hopelessly desired Rukmini's hand, comparing their own beauty with hers. Srimati Rukmini, however, was not interested in any of them. In her heart, she was simply expecting Krishna to come and carry her away. As she was adjusting the ornaments on her left hand finger, she happened to look upon the princesses and suddenly saw that Krishna was present amongst them. Although Rukmini had never before seen Krishna, she was always thinking of him. Thus, she had no difficulty in recognizing him amongst the princely order. Krishna, not being concerned with the other princesses, immediately took the opportunity of placing Rukmini on his chariot, marked by a flag bearing an image of Garuda. He then proceeded slowly without fear, taking away Rukmini exactly as the lion takes the deer from the midst of the jackals. Meanwhile, Balaram appeared on the scene with the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty. Jarasandha, who had many times experienced defeat by Krishna, began to roar, "How is this? Krishna is taking Rukmini away from us without any opposition. What is the use in our being chivalrous fighters with arrows? My dear princesses, just look. We are losing our reputation by this action. It is just like the jackal taking away the booty from the lion. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 52nd chapter of Krishna. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. So in summary, it goes on with this particular point where Krishna has to fight Jarasandha and all the other princely orders. And he defeats all of them. Well, he doesn't, but Balaram takes care of business with the Yadu soldiers and annihilates a good portion of the army. And so Krishna takes away Rukmini, and then Rukmi, the brother of Rukmini, he catches up with Krishna and Rukmini, and he challenges Krishna to a duel to take away Rukmini, his sister. And it's kind of funny because Rukmi would shoot arrows at Krishna and he would hit him, but he didn't even care. And then Krishna would shoot an arrow and cut the string of his bow. And he did this two or three times. And finally, Rukmi became so arrogant that he pulled out his sword and attacked Krishna. And at that particular point, Krishna just chopped up everything, his sword, everything, and left him there with nothing. And he was just ready to kill him, but Rukmini begged Krishna, please don't. He is my brother after all. He does love me. He really does love me, although he's, you know, ignorant. And but because he loves me, please spare his life. So Krishna said, okay, I'll spare his life, but what I'll do, I'll embarrass him. And it's very humiliating to be embarrassed the way he was embarrassed by Krishna cutting his hair off. Or not totally off, but in clumps. He would cut his hair in clumps. And this was a sign of defeat. And it was humiliating to him. And so in that way, he spared his life, but he humiliated him. And of course, Krishna went to Dwarka with Rukmini Devi. Does anybody else like to say anything? Make a comment? So this is our mother, the queen of New Dwarka. Krishna kidnapped her. And now we have her here in New Dwarka Dham. And we have a great opportunity to worship her and please her to the utmost by dedicating our life to her. Wonderful day to chant that prayer in front of her, the one that she spoke to Lord Krishna in the letter. Very beautiful. And we should really take these things very serious. They're not just fables or stories. These are genuine facts that actually happened. There actually was a Rukmini. There actually is a Dwarkadish. They actually exist. And we have the great opportunity by Prabhupada's mercy to worship them here in New Dwarka. So let us do that. And because she is the goddess of fortune, anything that we do to please her is very auspicious. And if we all cooperate together and we serve her together nicely, without any motivation except to please her and Dwarkadish, the results will be that we'll have a very wonderful, nice community. The opulence of any community is very sincere and dedicated devotees. It's not about material facilities. It's not about a building. A building is nothing without sincere devotees that worship Krishna. You can have the most opulent building in the world. There's so many opulent buildings. You can go downtown, there's skyscrapers. They spend $100 million. But what is the purpose of that building and that opulence if Krishna is not involved or not served? In the same way, this is a nice temple, but without devotees in the temple, without devotees serving Rukmini Dwarkadish, what is the use of this temple? There's no use for it. So let us please work together to serve her and Dwarkadish, and we'll have a very nice temple. This is what it means to have a nice temple. Yes, Amrabhata.
Just something brief regarding... First of all, thank you very much for a wonderful reading and reviving our memories of these incredible pastimes. Just at the end of the story, I should say just before, Rukmi went after Krishna to try to rescue his sister. And he just made a very strong vow that if I don't kill Krishna, then I will never come back to this city of Kundana. And he was very determined. So what happened, as you described, is what happened. He lost the battle, and he ended up having to go to some little outpost called Bhojakata, I believe, and he built the whole kingdom over there, which was another place where later on some other activities takes place, which is the marriage of, I think, Krishna's grandson, Pradyumna's son. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think Balaram kills Rukmi. After a chess, I think they were having a chess match.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes, Sachitanway.
If the devotees feel inclined to keep reading about this, a very interesting chapter also is the...
Yeah, the other chapter.
The other one where Krishna talks to Rukmini in the bedstead.
That's right.
And he's playing the role like, why do you marry me?
Yeah.
I'm useless. Great heroes like Shishupal and beautiful, strong. And then, though you choose me, why you did that? So on and on and on. And it turns out to be like something in which Rukmini fainted because he was even proposing, like, you know, maybe it's not too late. Maybe you can just go and find someone else. So anyway, so it turns out to be a very beautiful, philosophical, and instructive and glorifying Krishna Rukmini. So if you read that chapter, will be very nice.
Yeah, it's very sweet. Yes, Krishna was doing that teasing Rukmini, and she was teased to tears. And you're right, she almost like fainted when Krishna was speaking like that. All right, Shishi Rukmini Dwakadish Sakhi Jai. Thank you.